In 1950, Paddy Taylor, who had previously worked in Lipton's, bought the building. He had been sent from Dublin to Galway for 2 weeks to help out in the shop. The first night he was here, he met Vera Fitzmaurice on O'Brien's Bridge. She worked in a local butcher shop. Paddy never went back to Dublin. In Dominic Street, the grocery was out the front and the bar in behind, and at the back there was a room where they played darts and a lot of cards. There was a granite counter in the bar and a timber one in the grocery. When he was cutting with a knife, he would occasionally take chunks out of the wood, so he moved the granite counter out to the grocery and the wooden one into the bar. Paddy specialised in bacon, and there was a canopy that would cover the crew beans and the sides of bacon from the sun. The Taylor children spent much of race week cutting rashers for hotels and B&Bs.
And that's where you hung the bacon up on that. With actually, these are from it. I'm peeling out in there recently. You know, they were hanging off it. It was up high on that, yeah. And the bacon would be hanging down from that. And that was taken down, obviously. I don't know how it was taken down. He had to, because you couldn't sit in the window. Because that was a window where the seat is now. That was an actual window where the bacon would all be displayed. Most weekends, because the phone was in the hall, it was fairly private, and it was the only phone in the street, possibly apart from the Atlanta Hotel and a few other places. And most of the families from Chantal, as I said, possibly the Cladda, definitely were in America and in England. So the parents would come down, and the mother would come down, and I mean, it was an all-male bar, but that was totally understood that this had happened. And it'd be by prior arrangement, because they'd know what time they were, and they'd have to have a few drinks, and she'd have her good costume on her, and Daddy'd be all dressed up as well. And they'd be real anxious, the two of them, you know, honest to goodness, because these were native people from Connemara, and lovely, lovely family, and the girls were all in Boston. And Daddy'd go out onto the phone anyway, when it'd ring, and he'd have the phone out here, and he'd be roaring into it. How's the weather in Boston? And of course, you weren't laughing at him, but it was just, he'd be roaring because he'd be under such pressure. But anyway, one of the girls had a boyfriend called Chuck, so Chuck was put onto him one night anyway. Goes, hello, Chucks, he kept saying. How's the weather in Boston, Chucks? And everything was Chucks, Chucks, Chucks. Oh, the poor devil. So anyway, the phone call finished up and they came back into the bar, and then they had to have a few drinks before they were home to care themselves.
His children ran the bar for a few years, and then son Mick took over, and the business became known as Mick Taylor's. A whole new generation of characters became the regulars.
For me, Taylor's was really Taylor's when Mick Taylor was alive. He was a unique character. He was really a special character. There was always kind of a buzz around the place. There was a lot of politics involved down in Taylor's. There was rooms upstairs. The Workers' Party and the Labour Party were big fans of Taylor's. There was a character, so some of the characters, there was one character in particular, Porrick Stevens, and he was a man around town, and he used to bring his lip, bottom lip sometimes, up over his top lip. You know, he'd take his dentures out and he'd make these faces, and he could really stretch his face. Like, I got some inspiration from him as an artist myself. But one of his tricks was taking out his dentures and playing them off the table. And he'd be playing them, but he'd be kind of playing them and playing his elbows and playing his teeth off the table at the same time. And that man had rhythm. He really, and he kind of hummed along then as well. And the sound he created was just incredible. And every now and again he played the spoons as well, but obviously people loved when he played his teeth. You know, to see a man playing, taking his dentures out and playing them off the table was bizarre for all of us, you know.
My younger sister, Marilyn, again, she was working in the bank in Ennis, and she came home most weekends, and there could be anybody sleeping in our attic bedroom. That's God's honest truth. You never knew, like, Michael would just give them a bed and that'd be it, in scale. But anyway, she was very fond of baby doll pyjamas. And she was feeling a bit cold, so that was a spare room up there, and she knew there'd be an extra quilt on the bed, so she hops out of the room below and runs up the stairs and switches on the light. Now, it was one of these big fluorescent lights. And these two fellas set up in the two beds. There were two fishermen from the Aran Islands. And I don't know which of the three of them got the biggest fright. We said they were never seen again afterwards in Galway.
The middle section of Taylor's Bar, if anyone cares to remember, was reserved for, there was a singles club. And the back section, if you recall, was occasionally opened for, if the, you know, the spillover and all that, functions and all that. But the front section was, the drinking was done. The midsection, I don't know, was it on a Wednesday or a Tuesday, I can't remember. It was a singers club, and people went there to listen, acoustically, to listen to whoever was singing, guitar, maybe bouzouki, tin whistle or whatever. And a friend of mine, who had his regular gig there, started his session, and all the people were grouped around, and they were listening attentively to his singing. Except for there was one little bollocks in the corner who talked incessantly to his mate. You know, he didn't take any notice of the fact that somebody is actually singing, you know. So the guy put down the guitar and says, look it, if you want to talk to your mate, he says, well, in the front section or the back section, but look it, you know, I'm trying to work here, you know. So he might say, yeah. And then he kept yapping because he was drunk, you know. So my mate eventually kind of, your man didn't stop, you know. He lost the rag and he says, would you have f***ed off to the front? I'm f***ing taking a f***ing mate with you because I'm, you know, people are here to listen to what I'm doing, you know, I'm trying to earn a crust here, you, whatever, you know. So your man kind of gave him the two fingers and called him all sorts of names and he buggered off to the front section. That was the end of that. Now, what people didn't know was that the same musician was penciled in to have an operation on his spleen in about a week or two, a fortnight's time, you know. So your man is there in the hospital and, you know, he's in a private room prior to the operation and he has to get his pubes shaved because it's in the nether regions, you know. And he's there quite, you know, on his own waiting for the male nurse to come in to perform the shaving ceremony and all that kind of stuff, you know. And who should it be? Only the guy that he fogs out from a height, you know. And your man, my friend, says that was a stony silence.
The pub closed in 2004 and the building was converted into a gentleman's club. That situation is now reversed and Taylor's Bar reopened in the summer of 2018 in all its former glory, with its late 19th century shop interior with carved woodwork and polished granite counters intact. A visit to the pub will undoubtedly revive many's the happy memory.
Now, these would be 3-minute calls, you know, at the very, once the beeps went, that was it, they were gone. Anyway, he'd ring her and they'd have a fast conversation. She'd fill him in on all the news. And then just before, when she'd hear the beeps, she'd always ask him, do you love me? Do you love me? Like, and I won't say the name because they're still alive. Oh, my God. I mean, we wouldn't be laughing at them, but everyone in the bar would hear these conversations. And they were all a bit like that, you know. It was a huge social occasion, you know, to come down and get them. Well, when you consider it, like, once the girls went, they didn't come home very often. We were like an extended family to them. Now, they didn't have much money and they didn't have very little education. But my dad only, his policy was, Paddy Taylor, if I wouldn't invite you into my home, why would I let you into my bar? That's it. And it was never a row, it was never a fight, there was never anything. And if they were short on a Thursday night and they had no money, we'd put the pint or two on the slate, and on the way home on Saturday with their wages, the first thing they do is come in, pay the wife's bill in the grocery and pay the bar bill in the bar and have one pint and then go home and wash themselves and dress themselves and come down and have a good weekend.
Thank you for listening. For more information on this project and others, please visit our website, www.mothandbutterflystories.com/Slán.